Chapter 24. The Ivor County Parade. Maine bustled. A boy roping straw bale calves, cursing as he missed the top. Girls tossing beanbags into hoops. There was a stall selling hot dogs, a ramp for skateboards, nothing more than ply resting on an upturned plant pot. Hal took Robin to get his face painted. Duchess sat on the sidewalk and watched the floats. Mount Call Insurance, Trail West Bank. Little girls with tiaras waving to the flash of a couple of cameras. She saw Thomas Noble and his mother, Mrs. Noble. She was tall and striking. Heads turned as she strolled. Beside was an old man, short and thin and white. Thomas headed over. Your mother doing charity? Help the aged or something? Thomas Noble followed her eye. That's my father. She frowned. Geez. What's the attraction there? Financial or fetishistic? He tugged her arm. I've got something to tell you. It's urgent. She stood with reluctance as he led her from the crowds. Now Duchess could only guess at what Thomas Noble deemed urgent, and her guesses ranged from him believing his mother was fooling around with the mailman to feeling certain his withered hand was getting stronger and that he'd soon be able to crush cans with it. He had a thing about crushing cans. This better not be about your mother fucking the mailman. Her relationship with Thomas Noble had blossomed into the kind of one-sided friendship where he confided in her and she used his secrets against him without mercy. He wore a sun hat, took it off, and fanned himself with it as they moved beneath the shade of a maple tree. That kid, Tyler, his brother's here and he's looking for you.
You thought that was urgent?
You don't understand. He's big. I think you should head home. Where is he? Thomas Noble swallowed. Don't be a pussy all your life, Thomas Noble. Take me to the big boy so I can hand his ass to him.
He led her, shaking his head, wiping sweat with a trembling hand.
Word spread, kids clustered in the alleyway behind Cherry's Bakery.
That's him.
Duchess glanced at the kid, Tyler, the boy that had pushed Robin over. And then she looked at the kid beside him. Taller, fatter, uglier. He wore shorts that stopped at his calves, pale legs like trunks, Converse worn and faded, dark hair, bowl cut, a little acne on each cheek. Tyler pointed her way and the bigger kid came toward her.
Who the fuck are you? Duchess said, fixing the bow in her hair.
Galon.
Shit, I guess you had to grow up tough.
You mess with my family,
he stepped forward.
She rolled her eyes.
You threatened to hurt my brother.
Actually, I threatened to behead that motherfucker. A dozen kids now, blood in the water.
You apologized to him.
Shut the fuck up, fat boy. Collective gasps as kids backed up a little. Thomas Noble no longer beside her. Galen took another step, clenched a fat fist. And then she heard it. Part war cry, part girlish scream. The crowd parted for Thomas Noble as he sprinted through. He'd loosened his shirt and, for reasons Duchess did not dare comprehend, tucked his pant legs into his socks. Thomas Noble moved fast, boxed shadows and switched feet, circling Galon as he bobbed his head back and forth. Duchess brought a hand to her face and watched through her fingers as Galon laid him out with a single punch. And then the back door opened, Cherry taking out a trash bag. The crowd moved fast. Tyler and his brother disappeared. Duchess walked over and assessed the damage.
Did I win?
Thomas Noble said as she helped him to his feet.
It's the taking part that counts.
He touched his eye gingerly.
I'll have a black eye.
It's already black, she reasoned.
Maybe a blue eye then.
Come on, I'll get you some ice. She took his good hand in hers. Despite the pain, he managed a wide smile.
That was brave, right?
More stupid than brave. It was as she turned on to Maine, she saw it. Black Escalade. Her blood drained. Dark had found them. She let go of his hand and moved along trucks. Bumper stickers, Swan Mountain and Montana Elk, District 9. She thought of Dark, trying to blend between, his soulless eyes giving him away. Duchess saw Hal's truck. The windows rolled down. She popped the door and slipped into the passenger seat.
Thomas Noble looked on as she opened the glove compartment and slid the Smith & Wesson from its place inside. She tucked the gun into her jeans. Thomas Noble, the fight left him before it even arrived. They moved back to the sidewalk. The sun cast a hand over the street, lighting the kids and their parents, smiles of the unknowing. They walked up outside Cherry's past the barbershop. They hugged storefronts, Duchess scanning, hand on her belt. The gun, no longer cold, but burning hot, waiting on her. Across the street was the Escalade. She imagined Dark inside, watching her, and that way he did. She stepped into the road, fear keeping pace, but she forced it down behind a smile. She'd let Dark see it. She was glad he came because she wanted it done now. She would kill for Robin. She didn't even need asking.
"What are you doing?"
Thomas Noble tugged her arm, but she shook him off, turned, and glared. "Stay there.
You can't just go up to him."
Thomas Noble looked like he could cry, like he wanted to turn and bolt. But the emerging man inside was jostling for place with the frightened kid. She circled to the back of the Escalade. The sidewalk now, beside the car, she trailed a hand along the paint, the shine deep enough to mirror her.
"Duchess, please,"
he called, but she didn't turn. She slipped the gun from her jeans, kept it between herself and the car as she reached for the handle and pulled hard. It was locked. She pressed her face close to the glass and saw it empty. She spun around. The parade rolled on, drums, ribbons. Kids marched in the band while girls twirled and beamed. Duchess pushed her way through a group and heard kids curse her. Thomas Noble stayed beside. She saw Dark in everyone, warm smiles and cold eyes. She knew what men could do, all of them. Capability was enough. She was about to turn, and then she saw him. She ran now, flat out. She knocked Coke from a kid's hand, sent an old lady sprawling as people yelled. When she reached him, he turned, and he looked up and smiled. She knelt and took Robin into her arms. "What is it?" Hal said. And then a lady noticed what she held in her hand. "Gun!" Hal pulled her close as panic broke out around them. The call came after dinner. Hal filled him in. By the time the panic died, the Escalade was gone. Duchess did not get the plates. It could have been anyone. The reminder kept them all focused. As he cut the line, it rang again. "You're popular," Martha said. He'd promised to cook for her, lost track of the day, so ended up ordering in. Martha had laughed, said she was relieved she'd at least get something palatable. He'd left her in the house, working through more papers. "Cuddy," Walk said into the phone. He hadn't checked in with Cuddy in a while, so was relieved to hear the big man's voice on the other end. "How's he holding up?"
"I got him back in his old cell. Had to move a runner on. Bit something awful, but Vincent seems more settled in there."
"Thank you."
"Any news on the case? I tried asking Vincent about it, but he wouldn't say anything."
"Not like the others. Always crying innocence and injustice. I'd swear you'd think we'd locked up a bunch of choir boys." Walk laughed.
"So he hasn't spoken to anyone?"
"No. I tell you, it's like he never left here. Straight back into the old routine. Starting to think he missed the place." They made small talk a while, and then Walk heard Martha call. He stood, left his beer on the deck, and made his way into the living room. Martha didn't say anything at first, just straightened slightly, then leaned closer to the stack of files, put her glasses on, and focused. She'd been the one that made the break, that traced Dark's name to a company registered in Portland. "You get something?"
"Maybe. Go bring me some snacks. I need some thinking peppers. You got any habanero?"
He shook his head.
"Maligata?"
"Yeah, I don't know what that is."
"Shit, Walk, some fucking poblano. I need heat. Jesus, prepare for me next time."
Suitably chastised, he made his way into the small kitchen, brewed coffee, and watched the street. They'd been at it 4 hours from dinner to late, both yawning and red-eyed, but both knowing they would sooner work than lie restless in their beds. The case was getting to her now, more because of the way Walk looked, like he was being ravaged by the detail. He handed her the coffee and a peppermint. She fought a smile, then flipped him off. He watched her pace. In her hand was a corporation tax filing, a statement of registration. The trail was the kind of complex that had already seen her call in favors from a taxation lawyer she knew. Fortuna Avenue, she said. The second line homes. All but a couple are owned by the same holding company. When did the report come in? The first one? The eroding cliffs? California wild? Martha chewed the cap of her pen. Walk fished through a heavy stack of papers. May 1995. Martha smiled, then held up her paper. This company bought the first house in September 1995. And then they bought another almost every year since. 8 homes, rolling finance, each mortgage to pay for the next. That worked for the first 6, till the rate hikes. And then? Martha paced again, walked over to the cabinet, topped off her coffee with whiskey, and did the same to Walks. So this company bought every house on the second line. California Wild gauged it at 10 years, right? Give or take. Then they built a breakwater. The King House is safe. The second line, they're not worth all that much. Small, family homes, got them cheap, doesn't look like they increased much over the years. Until? Until the front line started to fall and the vacationers started to come. One by one, they went down. So all that stood between the company and what? $5 million at least. And all that blocked it was Vincent King and his family home. The land around, it can't be built on. No one would get a permit while the King House stands. This company, what's it called? The Mad Trust. What kind of name is that? The name, it doesn't matter. But guess who the sole director is? She handed Walk the paper and held it tight, trying to steady it. And there it was, at the top, bold print. Richard Dark. Chapter 25. That night, Duchess woke to a cold sweat. She saw shapes, the closet taking Dark's soulless form. When she calmed, she checked Robin, then slipped from the room and down the stairs. She wore a soft robe. Hal had left it out for her. It was something they had fallen into. She would still take nothing from him directly, no food or drink, no help with the horses, even when she had homework due and the day was draining fast. Instead, he left things for her, and she took them when he was not around. She marveled at his patience. She drank water straight from the faucet. As she turned to head back up, she heard it, movement on the porch. Maybe the swing of the seat, the chains loud, no matter how much Hal oiled them. She ducked low, her heart again racing away from her. She fumbled for the drawer, found a decent-length knife, and gripped it tight. She crept to the door, saw it open a little as moonlight fell onto her bare feet. Can't sleep? Shit! I was about ready to kill you! That's a bread knife, Hal said. He sat on the swing, reduced to the glow of his cigar, though as she neared, she saw the shotgun by his feet. You believe me then, she said. Maybe I'm just waiting on a bear. I should have got the plates. I picked up the gun and forgot everything else. Fucking rookie. She spit the words, mouth tight. You were protecting your family. Not many people brave enough to do that. She shook her head. Does Dolly know? After Hal had gently taken the gun from her, Dolly had appeared and led her into the safety of the diner beside. She's tough. Thought it'd do good to have another set of eyes out there. She asks after you every time I see her. I think maybe you remind her a little of her younger self. Why? Dolly's about the toughest lady you'll ever meet. She had it rough. She doesn't tell any of it. Her Bill, though I was drinking with him one time, Dolly's father, he was mean. He caught her smoking once. And gave her a hiding? No, he burned her with it. She's still got the scars on her arms. He told her she'd never have the guts to light one up again. Duchess swallowed. What happened to him? She got older and he put his hands. He went to prison. Oh, Hal coughed. She dressed different back then. I saw photos. She wore boy's clothes, shapeless, baggy, but he still came. Some people are all dark. They are. James Miller, paid assassin and gunslinger. He went to church regular, didn't drink or smoke. But rumor was, he killed 50. The mob lynched him.
You know what his last words were?
Tell me.
Let her rip.
Well, the mob got it right then. If the goods stand by idle, are they still good?
It was starry enough for snow. Hal said winter had not touched them yet. That when it did, they'd know it so well they'd forget the colors of fall. He scooted over.
She did not sit. They stayed in silence for a long time. When he finished his cigar, he lit another.
The cancer will get you.
It might.
Not that I care.
Of course not.
Darkness hid his eyes. He watched out trees and water and the nothing that was slowly becoming something to her.
He stood and walked into the kitchen, and she heard the whistle of the kettle.
She took a seat at the far end of the bench and eyed the shotgun.
He returned with Coco and set her cup down on the porch beside her. Soft light from the kitchen showed marshmallow in hers.
He sipped whiskey, a small measure.
There was a storm once.
Bad one.
I sat right here and watched lightning cross our land.
I thought about the devil. I saw his face in the sky, serpent tongue lashing out like that.
The barn burned.
She had seen an acre out where nothing grew, just the soot shape of what had once stood.
The gray. Her mother was in there.
Duchess looked over at him, grateful for the dark so that he could not see the panic in her eyes.
I couldn't get her out.
She breathed in that moment, knew well about the haunt of memory.
We had storms sometimes, she said. Back home?
I think of Cape Haven often. I prayed for your mother, for you and Robin.
You don't believe in God?
Neither do you, but I know you go to the clearing, and you kneel.
Just a place to think.
Everyone needs one. The storeroom, the guns, that's where I go to mull things. I sit down there and I shut out the world and I focus on what matters.
He glanced over.
I wrote to him.
Who?
Vincent King. Over the years, I wrote him letter after letter, and I'm not a writer.
Why?
He blew smoke toward the moon.
That's a big question.
She rubbed her eyes.
You should go to bed.
My sleep patterns are none of your concern.
He set his glass down.
At first, I wasn't going to send them. Just after Sissy and then all that happened with your mother and your grandmother. I wanted an outlet, maybe. But then I thought, why shouldn't he know? Maybe he thought he'd ruined his life. I wanted him to know about ours. Maybe he had a vision of me, retired here, sitting on beautiful acres. I told him about the work, about the debt, the bills, and living under that kind of weight.
Did he write back?
He did. At first, it was all sorrow. I know it was an accident. I do know that. But that doesn't really mean anything.
She picked up her cocoa and spooned the marshmallow into her mouth.
It was too sweet then, catching her out like she'd forgotten the good things. I went there to his parole hearings. I went to each one. He could have served less. He would have got out with his best years still ahead.
So how come he didn't? Walk never told me. I just figured he got in shit in that place. He did bad things.
He didn't. Cuddy, the warden, he spoke up each time. But Vincent declined a lawyer.
Walk was there too, same every time.
And we both saw each other, but I never said anything to him. Because that was Walk's friend up there, close, like brothers. I remember that back then. Thick as thieves. Of course, Vincent did the thieving, but Walk always backed him.
Duchess tried to see Walk as a boy, as Vincent King's best friend.
Instead, she saw Walk in his uniform, never out of it, not since she remembered. He was all cop, and Vincent was all bad.
Toward the end of the hearing, they'd always ask that same question. If you get out, are you likely to break the law again?
What did Vincent say?
He'd meet my eye, and he'd say yes, he would. He was a danger to the people.
Maybe he thought it was something noble, to serve the whole term. Penance like that. Small recompense, but intent was everything.
But now, knowing what she did, he was telling it straight. Vincent was a danger.
That pain, losing your mother, losing my daughter, my wife, all that was ever good for me. I know it all. I didn't think I'd get through it.
So how did you?
I came here. I took it back to breathing. Montana is good for that. You might see that one day. Star said there's correlation between suffering and sin.
He smiled, like he could hear the words direct from his daughter's mouth.
What was Sissy like?
He stubbed a cigar.
Death has a way of making saints out of mortals. But with children, there is no bad. She was small and beautiful and perfect, like your mother was, like Robin is.
He knew better than to mention her.
She liked to paint. She cried during 4th of July fireworks. She ate carrots, but nothing green. She doted on your mother. I look like her. I saw the photo, me and Star and Sissy. You do. Beautiful like that.
She swallowed.
Star said you were hard. She said there was nothing soft about you, not after. She said you were a drunk. She said you didn't go to my grandmother's funeral.
We begin at the end, Duchess.
If you thought that, you'd be all right.
You're full of shit.
She spoke quietly and without malice.
Are all the things she told me true?
I am a constant disappointment to myself.
I know there's more. Why you didn't come back? Why she wouldn't let you see us?
What did you do?
He swallowed.
A few years after, I heard talk of parole after 5 for what he did. My Sissy.
She heard the hurt there. A lifetime later, and it was still so present.
Maybe I did drink too much. Someone came. He had a brother in there, Fairmont County, with Vincent. He made an offer. He could make it go away, right the wrong. It wasn't even a lot of money. If I could have my time over, would I have been stronger and told him no?
The man Vincent killed in Fairmont, it was self-defense.
It was.
She took a long breath. His words so weighted she could not form a response.
Your mother found out, and that was it. All and everything. A single act on a distant night, and here we are because of it.
She drank her cocoa and thought of her mother.
She searched for a memory that might warm the night, but found nothing but the white of Star's eyes.
Is that why you go to church?
Understanding for what we have done and might do.
When she was done, she stood.
She felt tired, thought of Dark coming, and looked at the old man and the shotgun.
At the door, she turned.
Vincent, at the parole hearings. Why do you think he did that?
Hal looked up at her, and she saw Robin in his eyes.
They'd lead him off, and Walk would look at Cuddy like they couldn't make sense of it. But he wrote me. He tried to tell me.
She stared at him.
After that night, after what he did, he knew none of us would find freedom again.
They stood outside the old Radley house. From the moonlight that fell, Walk could just about make out Martha, the shape of her face. Small nose, hair just past her shoulders. He smelled her perfume, something light. They held flashlights and both flicked them on.
Walk had the record, the time Vincent made the call, and the coroner's estimate of time of death.
It could be accurate. Duchess had ridden her bicycle to the gas station on Pensacola. Walk knew she stuck to the main roads despite the risk, so it took her 45 minutes. That gave Vincent around 15 minutes to lose the gun. They had to work the assumption he was the killer, and that assumption had kept Walk awake the night before.
We'll head every direction he could have gone.
Martha had a stopwatch. They'd allow for the fact he could have run, sprinted there and back, though Walk didn't recall if the man appeared out of breath or sweating. But then Walk couldn't recall much of the detail of that night, aside from Star's face, which he knew he'd carry for the rest of his life. The memory loss, it was creeping on him.
He'd taken to making notes, pretending he was riding up when really he was just keeping check.
The order of his day, the time he took pills, he noted it all now. They started out into Star's backyard, stepped over the broken fence, which had been there as long as Walk could remember, into light woodland, just a copse that separated Ivy Ranch from Newton Avenue. They were methodical, every walkway, every tree and bush and cluster of flowers. They checked drains. Knew Boyd and his men and dogs had already run the same routes, but Walk was hoping for something more, something only a local would notice. He closed his eyes and put himself into Vincent's shoes. They walked 7 routes, some slight deviations from the last. They got nowhere at all.
He didn't have it. If he had, we would have found it, or more likely Boyd would have.
It's a hole in their case, a big one, Martha said. The DA will be pissed.
They found their way back to the Radley house and stood on the sidewalk.
She reached out and grasped his hand. He was close to breaking. Every way he turned, he couldn't figure it. He'd lost Dark, tried his cell over and over, and left so many messages he filled up the mailbox. He felt it. Dark killed Star and pinned the blame on Vincent King in order to get his hands on the house that would save his empire and make his fortune. It was flawed, but that's all he had to work on. As for the girl, he took comfort in the fact that Hal was a ghost. Radley Land was buried. The kids were safe up there. At the end of Newton, she led him down the neighbor's driveway and then hopped a low fence, hidden by thick barberry.
You still know all the shortcuts, Walk said.
Star showed me that one. 20 minutes and they were by the old wishing tree, stars over the ocean, the tower at Littlebrook like an abandoned lighthouse.
I can't believe it's still here.
You remember we used to make out under this tree?
He laughed. I remember everything.
You never could unhook my bra.
One time I did.
No, I unhooked it before. Let you have your moment.
She sat down, then reached up and pulled him down beside her. Together they leaned back against the wide oak and looked up at the stars.
I never said I was sorry, she said.
For what?
Leaving you.
It was a long time ago. We were kids.
We weren't, Walk. Not according to the judge. Do you think about it?
What?
Me? Pregnant? A baby?
Every day.
He didn't get over it, my father. He wasn't all bad. It's just he thought he was doing right by me.
And wrong by God. She said nothing for a while. The lights of a boat drifted, moving with the tide.
You didn't marry, she said.
Of course not. She laughed gently.
We were 15.
But I knew it.
That's what I loved about you, that pure belief in good and bad and love. You never said anything about my father, about what he did. You never told anyone. Even though I left you behind, and Star went to another school, and it was just you and this thing, this giant fucking sickening thing that Vincent did.
Walk swallowed. I just wanted you all to be happy. That laugh again. Nothing about it was pitying.
I did see you, he said, maybe a year after. At the mall in Clearwater Cove. I was with my mother and you were standing in line outside the movie theater.
She was quiet before it came to her.
David Rowan, just a boy. It didn't mean anything.
Oh, I know that. I didn't mean because of that. You looked happy, Martha. And I thought about that boy and he didn't know, right? He didn't know what we all went through, and I thought that must have been all right.
You could just, it wasn't there between you. You didn't have to share that thing. You could just be.
She cried. He held her hand. Chapter 26. As winter arrived, Radley Land froze, and the sky whitened with light snows.
Robin lay flat on his back and watched it so long Duchess had to drag him in when his fingers turned white. The field work eased, but the animals still needed tending. The gray and the black wore coats as they grazed. Duchess began to take the gray out each morning alone, saddling her at first light, and following tracks, she began to learn well. She took enjoyment from the Montana quiet. So thick, it was as if God had laid down a blanket over the woodland and smothered all but the loudest chickadees. They watched out for Dark, Hal sitting till late each night, a deer stalker and blanket and a shotgun by his feet. Some nights, Duchess woke and went to the window, saw him down there, then promptly fell back into deep sleep. Other nights, she went down and he fixed cocoa. They would sit, mostly in silence. But sometimes, she allowed him to tell her stories of Billy Blue, so dazzling and detailed, she wondered if the old man made them up himself. One night she fell asleep on his shoulder, then woke in her bed, the cover pulled up tight.
She spent weekends with Thomas Noble and Robin, tramping white woods, giving them a head start, then tracking their boot prints. The cold was crisp and fresh, and brought clarity to her wandering mind. She thought less about Cape Haven and its unchanging seasons, and more about Montana, and occasionally the future. She chose memories of her mother with great care, seeking only the diamonds amongst a mountain of coal. Her grades improved. She sat at the back and got on with her schoolwork, drafting Indians and settlers and making them live through her writing. She sent Walk a photo of Radley Land, taken from the window in her bedroom, the day they woke to thick snow. She went with Hal into town each Saturday morning. They did the grocery shopping, then headed to Cherry's to drink cocoa and eat donuts. Most days, Dolly was there, and they sat and talked with her. Bill's health had worsened, and beneath Dolly's faultless face, Duchess saw cracks beginning to snake in a show of prescient mourning that left her fretful after. They drove up to Hamby Lake, the water so deep it might have been an ocean. Hal rented a boat, cutting crystal water as they drifted and fished, the sun stealing the cold away for an afternoon as close to perfect as Duchess could allow herself to imagine. Robin pulled out a decent rainbow trout, then cried till Hal threw it back. Thomas Noble spoke of the winter dance often. Some days she merely told him to fuck off, others she accused him of plotting to spike the punch, then do wicked things once she had passed out cold. She called him a sexual predator, and he scratched his head and pushed his frames up his nose. The first day of December, he brought her a bunch of bluebells he'd been saving. Long dead, a sorry sight, but the sentiment was there. He biked the 4 miles through icy roads and up their carpeted driveway. By the time he arrived, mild frostbite had set in and he was seeing stars. Hal sat him in front of the fire till he thawed. "I won't dance with you," she said as they watched the flames. "I won't kiss you or hug you. I won't hold your good hand. I won't dress pretty, and I may not even speak to you for most of the night." "Okay," he said, a slight chatter in his teeth. From the doorway, she saw Hal and Robin smiling, and she flipped them off. The next Sunday, after church, Hal drove them to the strip mall in Briarstown. 10 stores in a neat row from Subway to Cash Advance. She found women's clothing in a place called Callie's. She rifled through rails of polyester, held a sequined gown to the light, and saw it bald in at least 5 places. It's like being in Paris. Hal pointed to a yellow dress, and she asked him what the fuck he knew about fashion. She pointed to his boots and faded jeans, his plaid shirt and wide hat, and declared him a scarecrow. They circled the store 3 times. Robin brought over gaudy finds, beaming as he held them against her, then running off when she asked him if he wanted his sister to dress like an 80s streetwalker. Callie herself came out, read the mood, and retreated to the counter. She wore a beehive and platforms and hid 20 surplus pounds beneath a wide belt. Hal smiled at her, and she returned a smile in sympathy. Duchess found it at the back, stopped still and stared. Then slowly, she reached out and picked it up. She placed the hat on her head and felt her stomach flip, her mind on Billy Blue, her blood, her place. It was a thing of beauty, leather studs, brim just right, the kind of hat an outlaw would kill for. Hal appeared behind. "Suits you." She took it off and checked the tag. "Jesus." "Stetson," Hal said, like that explained the eye-watering price. She would not ask for it, it was too fancy, but still, she glanced back longingly as she walked back to the dresses. "It'll have to be this piece of shit, then." She snatched the yellow dress from the rail. Hal made to speak, to tell her that was the very dress he'd picked out near an hour ago. She glared, and he thought better of it. Cuddy set up the meat, a burger joint just south of Bitterwater, Bill's, all fading red paint and air of going out of business. Handwritten signs told of $3 specials. It was empty. Walk rolled down the window as he headed to the drive-thru. The guy was old, Hispanic, hairnet and apron and furrowed brow, the kind of old man that took shit from punk kids, then picked up their trash like a tip. Walk checked the name tag. Luis.
Luis clucked Walk, then pointed to the lot. Walk drove over and parked, got out and sat on the hood. 10 minutes till he came, stooped Walk, shuffling feet.
I only got 5 minutes break, Luis said.
Thank you for meeting me.
Any friend of Cuddy?
Luis had occupied the cell beside Vincent's for 8 years. Armed robbery, the last in a long line of crimes. Tattoos on his arms spoke of affiliation. Walk guessed he was long past all that now.
You ask and I answer, and then I get on. The boss man, he doesn't like cops around his joint.
Fair enough. Tell me about Vincent King. Luis lit a cigarette, kept his back to the windows, and fanned the smoke as he blew it.
The only guy I ever met who didn't say he was set up.
Walk laughed.
Serious, he didn't say much of anything.
He didn't have friends in there?
No, not Vincent. He didn't even take his yard time, man.
And the pudding cups.
Excuse me?
Pudding. The food is dog shit. The pudding isn't.
I seen a man get stabbed for his pudding cup. Vincent gave me his every day.
Walk wondered what to do with that one.
You don't get it, cop. He ate just enough. He said just enough. Shit, he breathed just enough.
Enough to what?
Stay alive. No existence beyond the fundamental. He stayed alive to serve his time. And he made fucking sure it was the worst time he could serve. No TV, radio, no nothing. Would have spent his time in solitary if Cuddy had let him.
Luis held the smoke deep.
He had trouble in there, Walk said. Everyone does at some point. He had a girl, right, outside? Others talked about her. Maybe that was his weakness. Maybe thinking of her was someone else. Jealousy, I tell you. Inside, it'll drive a man crazy. He dealt with it well enough. Made sure others left him be after.
But they still came for him. I've seen the scars.
The only enemy that guy had was himself.
How do you mean?
He asked me to get him a blade. No big deal. I figured he wanted to settle up with someone.
He didn't?
Same day I gave it to him, I heard the guards hollering. Ain't unusual, but this was Vincent's cell, so I went up to see.
And? Walk watched his color drain.
Messy, man. Cut himself to ribbons. Deep, serious cuts. He didn't hit the arteries. He didn't want to die, just to suffer.
Walk let that sit a while. Found himself unable to speak. Throat tight, like he could barely breathe.
We done?
I need a character reference for him.
You won't find no one. Because no one knows, Vincent.
Luis dropped his cigarette, stubbed it out, then bent and picked up the butt. He winked at Walk, extended a hand and tutted when Walk went to shake it. Finally, Walk pulled out a 20 and Luis took it. Chapter 27. Dolly showed at their door, laden with a big box. She was there to collect Robin. He would spend the night at her place, as Hal said he'd keep free in case Mrs. Noble couldn't collect them after the dance. Always looking out, worrying. She led Duchess up to the bedroom and opened the box to a startling array of makeup and perfumes.
Don't make me look like a whore. I can't make any promises, sweetheart.
Duchess smiled at that. An hour later, and she walked down the stairs, her hair expertly curled and her lips shining pink. She wore a new bow and new shoes that Callie had helped pick out. She'd gained a little more weight, no longer so skeletal, her muscles tight from the work. She saw Hal wearing something like pride on his face, so she told him to shut the fuck up before he could say a word.
Beautiful, Robin marveled. You look just like Mom.
They tailed Dolly and Robin till they turned off at Avoca. Snow fell lightly, but the roads were salted. Dolly's place was big, fancy, and lit with warm window light. She'd asked after Bill. Dolly said he didn't have the good sense to give up. They passed a sign blinking drive slow.
You nervous? Hal said.
About getting pregnant tonight?
Nah. What will be, will be.
They turned on to Carlton.
I'm worried about Robin, she said.
He glanced over.
What he knows about that night, it's not back, but I don't know. He dreams about it. I think maybe he heard it all.
Then we'll deal with it.
Just like that?
Yes,
That sound all right?
She nodded. They made the turn onto Highwood Drive.
Shit. What?
And then he saw, and he tried not to smile, but lost the battle fully. The path to the Noble House, swept of snow, but lined with rose petals.
Fucking shoot me now.
At the window she saw him, face pressed to the glass like Robin waiting on Christmas.
He's wearing a fucking bow tie. He looks like a magician.
Hal brought the truck to a stop. The street door opened, and Mrs. Noble stood there, camera in hand. Behind her was Mr. Noble, and he held a video camera, so big it mounted on his shoulder and threw out a blinding spotlight. Turn back. No way I'm walking into that freak show.
It's all right. Maybe do it for them, just once.
A selfless act.
I'll be waiting up. You call me if there's a problem.
She took a deep breath, then reached for the mirror and fussed with her bow.
You have a good time tonight.
I won't. She opened the door and the cold met her.
My dress is plain, not like the other girls.
Since when do you want to be like them? You're an outlaw.
I'm an outlaw. She stepped into the snow.
He fired the engine, and as she moved to shut the door, she called,
Hal.
Yes, Duchess?
She met his eye. He looked old then, capable, but she knew the toll and its cost. She thought of her mother, of Sissy.
I'm not sorry for everything I've said to you, she swallowed.
It's all right. It's not.
But I think one day it might be.
You go on now. Try and have fun.
Smile for the cameras.
Both of them.
She flipped him off, but added a smile to it. The glitter ball spun, and Duchess watched light shards over the crowd. The theme was Wonderland, and she stared at the cotton snow and frosted flowers. Above them, balloons hung in white and blue. Painted stars and cardboard trees circled a dance floor made to look like ice. She fiddled with her corsage.
It itches. Did you find it in a dumpster?
My mother picked it up.
They hung at the back. She saw girls in fancy dresses and heels, teetering. She said a silent prayer they would fall. Thomas Noble wore a dinner suit, a size too big, so his bad hand withdrew into the cuff. Draped behind was a silk cape, so fantastically bizarre she could not tear her eyes from it.
My father said a gentleman always sports a cape to a formal event.
Your father is 150 years old.
He's still got moves. I have to go in the backyard when they make love because the noise is deafening.
She stared at him, suitably horrified. The music started up, and Duchess watched a group of girls run at the dance floor. Thomas Noble fetched them a juice, and they found seats at a table by a heart-shaped stage and photographer.
Thanks for coming with me.
You already said that 18 times.
You want cake?
No.
How about some potato chips?
No.
They played something fast. Jacob Liston cleared a space and broke out his best moves, while the girl he was with clapped awkwardly.
Duchess frowned. I think he might be having a fit.
The song switched to something slow. The floor thinned.
You want it?
Don't make me say it again.
Nice suit, Thomas Noble.
Billy Ryle and Chuck Sullivan.
At least it hides his cripple hand.
Laughter. Thomas Noble sipped his juice and kept his eyes on the dance floor. She reached over and took his bad hand.
Dance with me.
As they passed, she leaned over and said something to Billy. He moved away, quick.
Keep your hands away from my ass, she said as they reached the floor.
What did you say to Billy?
I told him you had a 10-inch cock.
He shrugged.
That's a quarter truth.
She laughed, so much and so hard she'd forgotten how good it felt. She held him.
Shit, Thomas Noble, I can feel every rib.
And that's in clothes. You wouldn't want to see me topless.
I can imagine. I once saw a documentary about famine. I'm glad you came here. You wore me down with relentless pressure. Your father would be proud.
They bumped into Jacob Liston and his date. Jacob was wriggling like he needed to piss. Duchess shot his date a compassionate smile.
I mean here, Montana. I'm glad you came to stay.
Why?
I just...
He stopped moving, and for a wretched moment, she thought he might try and kiss her.
I just never met an outlaw before.
She stepped a little closer and moved with him.
Walk sat in his office, blinds drawn, but town lights cut the dark. He cradled the phone on his shoulder, made notes as he spoke to Hal. He rested his feet on a stack of papers, saw his tray fit to burst. He'd get to it all. The mess bothered everyone but him. He checked in each week, same time on a Friday night. It was usually quick, a catch-up about how the boy was doing all right, still seeing the shrink, and then on to the girl. Sometimes they'd speak 5 minutes, just long enough for Hal to tell her something bad she'd done, and now he'd had to check his laughter till he was done being pissed. Walk knew that act well.
It's slow, Hal said. With Duchess, it's slow, but she's getting better. It's getting better.
That's good.
Tonight, she's at the school dance.
Wait a minute. Duchess is at a dance?
It's the winter formal. They go all out. The whole of Evergreen Middle is lit up. You can see the spotlight from Cold Creek.
Walk allowed himself a smile. The girl was doing all right. Against the odds, and they were stacked, she was living a life.
But Robin, I think he's starting to remember.
Walk dropped his feet down again and pressed the receiver so tight he could hear the old man breathing.
Nothing concrete.
Did he mention any names? Dark? Hal must have heard the desperation there because he spoke the next line softly.
Nothing concrete, Walk. I think he's slowly opening himself to the fact that he might have been there when his mother was murdered. The shrink is good. She doesn't ask or pry or try and guide him any place at all.
Part of me hopes he doesn't remember.
I said that to her. She told me there was a decent chance he never would.
I think about all of you up there.
I watch out for him, this dark. When she saw the car, I thought he might have come, like she always said.
And now?
I'm still waiting. Shoot first, ask questions later.
Walk smiled, a tired smile.
Sleepless nights had taken their toll, wrestling his thoughts to the ground and pounding them clean out of his head. Some days he found himself on a stretch of highway and clean forgot where he was supposed to be heading.
Good night, Hal. You take care. He replaced the receiver and yawned. Normally, he was so beat he'd head right home, drink a Sol beer, and watched ESPN till sleep found him. But right then, he got the overwhelming urge to see Martha. Not even to talk, just not sit the night alone.
He picked up the phone, started to dial, and killed it. He was fully aware of what he was doing, gradually sliding into a life he had no right to interfere with. It was cold. No matter how he felt, it was a cold and cruel thing to do. When she saw him, she remembered the darkest part of her life, and she always would. He walked down the hallway, slowly, the station in darkness.
Leah, I didn't know you were still here.
She looked up, tired, not even a smile.
Overtime, right? Someone's got to sort the filing system out. It'll take me the next month, even working through the night.
You need a hand?
No, you get on. Doesn't matter if I'm here all night. Ed wouldn't even notice.
He went to say something, wasn't sure what, but then she turned away and went back to work. He headed out, thinking of Duchess Day Radley at a school dance and smiling his way into the warm evening. The snow, like the talk, worsened as they drove. Mrs. Noble asked Thomas about the dance. He told her it was the best night of his life.
Duchess watched snow build on the farmland beside, usually lost to the dark. She could see a mile out to mountains.
When they reached Radley Land, Mrs. Noble went to turn, but the driveway was deep now. Hal couldn't keep on top of it. It was too long, and the snow fell too fast.
I can walk it from here.
You sure, honey? I'd take a run at it, but I think we might get stuck tonight.
Hal will be on the porch. He'll see your lights and start walking down. You get on.
She climbed out quick and set off up the driveway before Mrs. Noble or Thomas could get out and try to follow. Halfway, she turned and waved and watched them trail light into the distance. She trudged the snow, lifting her new shoes high at each step.
Gum trees stood, branches weighed under snow, arc of white like she was walking through a wedding arch. Free, she faced the sky, the turning snowflakes, the beauty almost too much to take. She thought of Robin and how they would spend their weekend, fanned out angels and snowmen as tall as their grandfather. When she cleared the reaching trees, moonlight graced the old farmhouse, and she smiled without knowing why. In the distance, light burned in the kitchen. She took another step and then stopped, dead. Prints in the snow, almost covered, but still they remained. Footprints, big prints. The first time that night, she felt the cold, the real true bite of Montana cold. "Hell," she said quiet. She picked up her pace a little, her heart beginning to race. Something was wrong, she could feel it. And then she saw him, and she calmed. He sat on the bench, the gun by his feet. When she reached the porch, she waved, smiled wide, then climbed the steps. She'd tell him about her night, just how bad it was. But then she saw his face, pale, tight, sweat by his head. Labored breaths, but still he tried to smile for her. She approached slow, and then with great care she pulled the blanket from him. And that's when she saw the blood. "Oh, fuck! Hell!" she whispered. He kept a hand pressed to his stomach, but the blood drained fast and steady. "I got him," Hal said. He offered one hand to her as his life emptied. She took it, his blood to her like some fatal disease. She let go and ran for the phone in the kitchen, Ivor County PD on speed dial. She told all she could. She left prints of Hal's blood on the receiver. She fetched whiskey from the cabinet and ran back out. "Fuck!" she put the bottle to his lips. He coughed, the blood there now. "I got him, Duchess. He ran, but I got him. Don't talk. People are coming. People who know what to do." He watched her. "You're an outlaw." "I am," she said, her voice breaking. "You make me proud." She clutched his hand tight, pressed her head to his, closed her eyes, and held her tears back. "Fuck!" she yelled it. She hit his arm, his chest, slapped his cheek hard. "Grandpa, wake up!" She looked down at the blood on her new yellow dress, and then down at the snow where footprints led her eyes to white fields. She knelt once more. "We begin at the end." She took the shotgun from beside him. She no longer felt the biting cold, no longer noticed the fullest moon. She did not see stars or the red barns or the frozen water. At the stable, she saddled the gray and led her from her place. She pulled herself up with one hand, the shotgun in the other, and she snapped the reins as they ran after the prince. She cursed herself, complacent, the way she had fallen into the promise of a new life. She remembered the anger, the hot, twisting anger. She told herself who she was. Duchess Day Radley. Outlaw.
Part 3. Restitution. Chapter 28. He made the drive from day to night. High beams, blinking wildflower, Mojave nothing but morphing shapes. Route 15, the lights of Las Vegas, dazzling like some grand alien craft had fallen from the sky. Rising billboards, styled magicians with eyebrows arched and aging starlets taking their back catalog all the way to the bank. He watched it fade in the rear view, and before long, it was like it had never been. He skirted the Valley of Fire, Beaver Dam and the eternal shadow of the canyon behind, motel lights and gas stations, and a highway that emptied as the hours drifted. Cedar City, he stopped at an all-night diner, historic downtown in Iron County, mostly sleeping. He sat at a booth and listened to a couple guys talk about Clark's send-off. He couldn't figure out if Clark was dead or getting married. He rubbed his eyes to signs, Pocatello and Blackfoot, Idaho Falls. As Caribou Targhee came to view, he saw the first blue in 1,000 miles of black. He slowed on 87 and watched the sunrise by Henry's Lake,
The water, so many refracted colors, he rubbed his eyes once more. The first snow at Three Forks, white fields ran to white sky. He closed the window and blew the heater, but did not feel the cold, nor the heat. When Ivory County PD called, Walk had been home, laid up, some kind of palsy, gripped him so tight he almost could not reach the phone. But then after, when the cop hung up, he slammed the receiver down again and again until it broke apart. Then he'd heave the contents of his desk onto the carpet, kicked his computer screen until it cracked, and then slowly, he'd cleared it all up again. Any illusion, the postcards, Friday night calls with Hal, any illusion the girl and the boy might yet get their deserved life had died such a cold and final death that Walk did not speak to anyone for 3 days. He had taken leave, vacation time backdated a decade, got them so worried Luann had stopped by and hammered on his door. He did not answer, nor did he answer Martha's calls. He spent the first day in his apartment. Dark's life mapped out on the wall behind his television set so he could never get the man from his mind. He chased leads so old the numbers did not connect, or if they did, he reached confused people that had not heard Dark's name in 20 years. He tried drinking, a bottle of Jim Beam, made it a quarter way through before he gave up. His meds with the alcohol just made him drowsy. He longed for a mistake, a reason he could carry the blame on his shoulders and sink down deep. But again, he found nothing. It was a cruel hand of fate, a nothing anomaly. Dark made a choice and saw it through. And they could still not pin a thing on him. No witness, snow-buried blood. They put out all points, blocked the only roads, sent a team in as deep as they could. Ivor County worked the theory the killer was dead, buried in a tomb of ice somewhere amongst the woodland, likely torn apart by the animals once he thawed. Walk returned to the station and got on. He wrote up routine violations, stopped by routine elementary schools, and worked routine shifts 4 days and one night. Martha stopped by, uninvited. Then when he told her, she pressed a hand to her mouth like she wanted to scream. If Walk was broken before, what happened in Montana scattered the pieces so far and wide he gave up all hope of being whole again. He visited Vincent, sat in the hot waiting room for 3 hours in case Vincent changed his mind and came out. He stood with Cuddy and watched basketball and did not flinch when men took hard balls or lost a tooth to an elbow. The beard was long now, past his neck down to his skeletal chest. He had aged a decade in months, his skin pursed tight over hollow cheeks. The snow thickened at Lewis and Clark. He washed up in a gas station on 89. It smelled of piss, and he tried shallow breaths as he pulled off his uniform. He stood naked beneath flickering light. No bulging stomach, sagging chest. Instead, he saw ribs and hip bones. He dressed, shirt on, slacks, tie. His hair was cropped close now, so he did not need to comb it. His hands shook. He did not fight them. They no longer cooperated. If he held a phone with one, he could not grasp a pen with the other. It was exhausting. Maddening. Canyon View Baptist. Someone had cleared the lot, walled it off with snow piled high. He was early by an hour, so rolled his seat back and closed his eyes. A night on the road should have seen him grab 30 minutes, but his mind would not leave him. He thought of Duchess when she was small and the way she had looked at him, like he was a man who could solve her problems. First cars rolled into the lot. He watched them, old people that wore the cold on their faces, cheeks red as they ambled into the small church. He found a corner at the back. An organ played something serene. At the front was the coffin. He stood when others did. And then he turned and saw the boy, Robin, holding the hand of a lady he did not recognize. The boy looked older suddenly, like the child had once again been robbed by the pull of a trigger. Behind them she appeared, her dress dark and simple. She kept her eyes up and hard, challenging. She gazed around the church. People tried their best to smile sad smiles. She did not return any. She was not a child now. When she saw him, she stuttered just one step, a reluctant memory, and then she was past. As she sat at the front, he saw the bow in her hair, tucked out of sight, but it was there. Behind her was a slight boy with glasses, and when the priest spoke and Robin began to cry, the boy placed a hand on Duchess's shoulder. She did not turn, just shook his hand from her. After, Walk followed them back to the Radley farm. Inside were sandwiches and cake. A lady who introduced herself as Dolly handed Walk a coffee. Robin stood with the lady and looked as lost as a child ever had. He said no thank you when Dolly offered him a donut. He said no thank you when the lady asked him if he wanted to head up and take a last look at his bedroom. Walk slipped out and crunched the snow, following small prints. He found her at the stable, her back to him as she patted a handsome gray, her small hand on the horse's nose. The horse bowed, nuzzled against her, and she kissed it gently. "You can leave now." She did not turn. "You don't need to stay longer. I see everyone in there, watching the clock, like Hal would have wanted them in his house anyhow." He stepped beneath the arched roof. "I'm sorry." She raised a hand. "It's all right. Fuck off." He didn't know which, and it did not matter much. "There's a kid in there. He keeps looking out for you."
"Thomas Noble."
"He doesn't know me, not really."
"It's important to have friends, right?"
"He's a normal kid, two parents, makes good grades, 6 weeks at their vacation home in Myrtle Beach each summer. We breathe different air."
"Are you eating all right?"
"Are you? You look different, Walk. Where's that soft gone?" She wore only her dress, but did not shiver.
"That lady at the church with Robin," he started.
"Mrs. Price, that's what she likes us to call her. In case we forget how temporary our place is, she came to show face."
Walk met her eye for a moment, then she looked away. "I'm so sorry."
"Fuck, Walk, stop saying that. Hand we get dealt, right? Fate, resignation, there's no difference."
"They don't teach that at church."
"Free will is an illusion. Sooner you accept, the sooner you get on."
"The farm?"
"I heard them talking. Hal had debts. It'll go at auction and they'll be cleared. Radley land, we're all just caretakers."
"And Robin?"
Sadness then, that only he could see, buried deep behind her eyes. He doesn't speak now. He hasn't said much, but yes or no. They'll try and place us, foster care till then. Mrs. Price, Mr. Price, they get paid to take us in. Feed us, send us to bed at 8 because they like their own time."
"Christmas." He regretted the word like it had a place.
"Our caseworker brought gifts. Mrs. Price, she didn't leave nothing out for Robin."
He swallowed.
She turned and patted the gray again. "She'll get sold, unless someone wants her with the farm. I hope they don't run her hard. She limps a little now, after that night."
"She fell."
"I fell," she said, bitter. "It wasn't on her. She's a decent horse. She stayed with me after, just there, beside me." The snow began to drift once again. He looked back at the farmhouse, the boy with glasses being led out by his mother, craning his neck to get a look at Duchess. He thought of Vincent and Star.
"Will you get to stay here? Same school?"
"We have a woman. She works our case. That's what we are now, Walk. A case. We are numbers in a file, a list of traits and mistakes."
"You're not a number. You're an outlaw."
"Maybe my father's blood is so fucking weak it steals away the Radley. I'm not Star or Hal, Robin or Billy Blue. I am one night, one mistake, one reaction. I'm nothing more."
"You can't think that."
She turned from him like she was talking to the gray. "I'll never know who I am."
He looked across frozen land, the elk and numbers at the base of the mountain. "If you need me."
"I know."
"But still.
That old priest, he asked us the meaning of life one time after service. The young kids, he asked us all in turn. Most talked about family and love."
"And you?"
"I said nothing because Robin was there." She coughed. "But you know what Robin said?"
He shook his head.
"He said life means having somebody care enough to protect you."
"He's got you."
"And look where we are."
"But you know that's not..." She held up another fuck you hand.
"They think the man Hal shot is dead.
I know.
They won't search for him anymore. It was dark. They don't believe me.
Together they walked through snow toward the cruiser. I think of Vincent King. He wanted to make a link, star to dark. He could not.
You know this isn't on you.
He read her well.
It is, Walk. This time it is on me.
He turned and wanted to hug her, but she stuck out a hand and he shook it.
I don't think I'll see you again.
I'll keep in touch.
Can you not?
The first shake in her voice, just slight, but he saw her turn her head.
Just go and tell me to be good or something like you used to, and then you get on and I'll get on.
Ours is a small story, Chief Walker. Sad enough, but small. Let's not pretend different. They stood in a silence that rode over the trees and the Radley land. All right, he said.
And?
Be good, Duchess. Chapter 29. Their caseworker wore purple lipstick, as close to somber as she ever got. Shelley. Her hair was three kinds of color, none of which Duchess decided were natural. She was loving, soulful. She held her future with the kind of care warranted and cried openly for the man she had never met. They sat in the back of her rusting Volvo 740, Coke cans on the floor, ashtray spilling, though she never smoked when they were in the car. Duchess turned by the water and watched the farmhouse for the last time as they dipped beneath the praying trees.
You kids all right back there?
Shelley crunched second, and the car shuddered. Duchess reached over and took her brother's small hand. He did not fight her and did not squeeze back, just let it lie there, limp and dead to her. Shelley smiled in the mirror.
It was a lovely service.
They drove, mile on mile of white, winter reaching so long they could not recall fall. Air so chill, Duchess was grateful. Let the world freeze over. Let all the colors drain till the canvas was blank once more. They arrived in the town of Sadler, lines of neat shovel driveways. The Price house sat on a street of identical 10-year-old homes. Theirs was painted a shade of putty, so bland it was as if the developer was ashamed to blight such beautiful land with it. Here we are. You all right with Mr. and Mrs. Price? Shelley asked that often.
Yes, Robin said.
And Henry and Mary Lou?
The Price children, close enough in age, but a world apart. Church polite in front of their parents, but Duchess heard them talking amongst themselves about Hal and what happened. How they should not go near the girl because, rumor had it, she chased down a man and fired a shotgun at him. And what kind of girl does that? Obviously too sheltered to know of outlaws.
They're fine, Duchess said.
They said goodbyes and took hugs. Duchess led Robin up the Price path. Shelley waited till Mr. Price opened the door, then waved again and deserted them. Duchess went to help Robin with his smart shoes, but he moved away from her and did it himself. Mr. Price said nothing, did not ask after the funeral, just turned his back and left them to it. Duchess could not claim they were mistreated, just left far behind. Dinner on different plates, drinks in plastic beakers instead of glass. They were left with the television set in the playroom while the Prices sat in the den. Here, but not. Duchess followed Robin through to the kitchen, white units and marble. Henry's report cards on the refrigerator, Mary Lou's artwork framed and hung above the dining table. Robin stood at the doors and looked out. The yard. The snowman was large. Mr. Price and Henry rolled more and more. Mrs. Price and Mary Lou crossed snow with sticks, broke them to the right length for arms. Henry said something and they laughed.
You want to go out? Duchess said.
At that moment, Mrs. Price looked up, saw them, then turned and went back to her own. She placed an arm around Mary Lou, protective, defining. Their room was the converted attic. Duchess followed Robin up the stairs. They had a small bath to themselves, a basin and tub and toothbrushes and a cup. Some dog-eared books on a small shelf. Famous Five, a selection of Dr. Seuss.
You want to change out of your smart clothes?
He lay back on his bed and rolled away so she could not see him cry. His shoulders shook lightly, and she went over and sat beside him.
When she placed a hand on his arm, he shrugged her away.
You shouldn't have even come today. You hated Grandpa. Even when he was kind, you said mean things to him because you're just mean all the way through.
He stared at the skylight above them. Snow drifted down, borrowed shelter, all that kept them from the wilds now.
I'm sorry, she said. You always say that.
She poked his ribs. He did not smile.
You want to read a book?
No. You want to throw snowballs at Mary Lou's face? I could make them out of pure ice. Almost a smile. Or I could nail Mr. Price with one, break a tooth, spear Mrs. Price with an icicle.
We could make Henry eat yellow snow.
How do you make yellow snow?
Piss in it.
He laughed then. She pulled him in.
Will we be all right? He said.
We will.
How?
Well,
you can't look after us, and I don't think Mr. Price wants us here. They get $1,200 each month to look after us.
So they might keep us for all that money.
No, this is just foster care. Remember what Shelley said? She'll try and find us a decent family to stay with forever.
With a farm and animals?
Maybe.
And we can go do Grandpa's ashes soon.
When they call Shelley.
So we'll be all right then. Everything will be all right.
She kissed his head. She did not like lying to her brother.
In the bathroom, she found small scissors and cut his nails.
I should have done this before.
He watched her.
You look like Mom again. You should eat.
She rolled her eyes. He smiled. That night, they ate mashed potatoes and sausage together in the small room in front of the television set. They still wore their funeral clothes.
She knows how to cook, at least, Robin said as he ate. I could eat two of these sausages.
Duchess moved to knife her sausage onto his plate, but he pushed her hand away.
Not yours. You need to eat too.
I'll go see if I can get you another. She grabbed her plate and walked slowly down the hallway. Robin shut in, cartoons playing. On the wall were family photos, one at Disney with Henry and Mary Lou wearing mouse ears, one at Kennedy, another at the Canyon. Mr. Price and Henry wore matching ball caps. There was a sign, "Bless This Mess," a caricature of Mrs. Price by the water, her smile way bigger than Duchess had ever seen it. She stopped by the kitchen door and heard them at the dining table, Mr. Price asking Mary Lou about her test and Henry about softball. She waited till Henry started talking, then slipped into the kitchen.
Duchess?
She turned. Silence as they looked her way.
Robin liked the sausage, so I was looking for another.
All gone, Mr. Price said.
Oh.
She glanced at Mary Lou's plate and saw she had three.
Duchess turned and left them, forked her own sausage and held it out.
As she got back, she passed it over to Robin.
You ate yours already?
He said.
Yeah, they were good.
Told you. When the house was sleeping, she moved silent down the stairs and into Mr. Price's study. All wood, neat stacks of books on finance and currency. At the computer, she searched Vincent King and read all she could about the case. It confused her that Vincent didn't plead it out and cop life when his guilt was clear like that. The newspaper said he still didn't speak. Not at the arraignment, and still had not instructed a lawyer. The DA was slick. She was going to bat for Star Radley and her orphans. Those poor children. She spun quick when she heard someone at the door.
You're not supposed to be in Daddy's office.
Mary Lou, well-fed, hair brushed daily by Mrs. Price, skin mottled by acne. She was 15, and Duchess guessed she was the kind of girl that would one day wear a purity ring before losing it the first time she drank liquor.
I had to use the computer.
I have to tell him. Duchess loaded her voice with childlike fear.
Oh, please don't tell Daddy on me.
You should watch it.
Or,
you think you're the first kids we had here?
Duchess stared at her.
I heard you talking to your brother. You think you'll get placed?
Mary Lou laughed.
Why wouldn't we?
Well, Robin might. He's young enough, decent enough. But I heard Daddy talking about you, all your troubles. Who's going to want you?
Duchess took a step forward. Mary Lou took a step forward.
You want to hit me, don't you? lash out. That's what kids like you do.
Duchess clenched her fist.
Do it, then.
A smile, knowing.
Duchess felt the adrenaline kick, the fire burn. And then she looked back at the computer screen. A picture of the scene that night, the small house on Ivy Ranch Road, a blur of neighbors and reporters. And the picture beside Cape Haven PD. Walk, smiling. Her reminder of everything good. She slipped past Mary Lou, took a breath, and went back up the stairs.